It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 407. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. Please leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request and follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And of course, the wiki where all of the links to all of the archives all the way back to show number one. And that you can find at mtswiki.com. I have another, I think, great show lined up. Couple stories from in the trenches I'm going to talk about. I have a software application that we've mentioned in the past, but I don't think I've ever went into the detail I'm going to go into tonight. And I have, again, great emails from you. Let's get started right away. First, last night, I get a call from a client who owns a carpet store, and he calls me right before he's leaving with the following description of the problem. He says, Mike, I can't print from this one laptop. Now, they only have like three computers, but this laptop's out on the floor in the showroom. And I said, boy, let's try a couple things. And I said, help me out where that printer that you're printing to. And it's a network based printer, and I'm thinking, okay, let's see if we can ping it. Let's see if we can, can't ping it. I'm like, oh, okay, wait a second. I said, open up a browser. Can't get on the internet. So we have no network connection. I said, did you reboot? He says, no, let me reboot. So he reboots. There's no network connection. When I walk him through going to the wireless network settings, this is Vista Home Premium. He is viewing the wireless networks, but it says there are no wireless networks available. Now I'm not sure if the wireless is set up right. I said, this is sometimes so hard to troubleshoot over the phone. I'll come out there in the morning, and it's not that far of a drive. I'll come out and check it out. I meet him at 9 a.m., but before that, I log in to one of the LAN hardwired systems that is on, and it's the one system that hosts all the files that they share, and then it's backed up every night. And what made me think about this is I get the email that the backup worked. So I was like, wow, so the network's up and running, and let me log in and see the wireless. So I log into that system. I can admin the Netgear router, and I'm looking at it, and everything's set up right. Everything looks like it's working. As I'm riding out there in the morning, it dawns on me. This Dell laptop, maybe someone accidentally hit the switch and turned off the wireless. And that is exactly what the problem was. The minute I get there, and I got my equipment and I got stuff that I even brought a spare, one of those small USB Wi-Fi adapters. So in case the wireless somehow is broken, I can try it. I have my laptop with me so I can test getting on. But the first thing I see is that function F2. I hit that. The wireless comes on. It finds the network. Everything's working. And happy, happy. But had I done that troubleshooting the night before, which I just didn't even think of that. And that's why I'm bringing that up. Think of those little things that can make a big difference and save you some travel time, possibly. It had been a while since I'd been out there, so I didn't mind making some contact with the client. that was kind of nice. Then there was a Starbucks next door, so I was able to kill some time there before my next meeting. I think that was one of the reasons why I said, hey, let me come out, because I hadn't been there in a couple months. All of your clients, and this is a very small retainer client, it's only a couple hours for 3 months. One of the things that you got to make sure that you do a touch and do a visit. So I think that in the back of my mind made me stop troubleshooting because I wanted to get out there and needed a reason to be on site. So I think subconsciously I kind of engineered it so I'd be going out there. But it was nice to have it so quick. And then of course, when I fix it that quickly, you know, you look like a miracle worker. So that's always nice. Now let's move on to another client who calls me in a panic and said, Mike, I did a bad thing. And I'm like, uh-oh. And she says, I got an email. And the minute I heard that, I was like, oh, no. What did you click on? She says, I'm expecting a lot of packages. So when I get this email that says it was from DHL and it was about my shipment, I clicked on it and then was immediately infected. And she said, it looks so good. That was the real DHL logo. And I said, I know. I said, you could get them from FedEx and UPS and they look so good. They are getting so clever in disguising the infections to get you to click on that attachment. And you just have to resist. Everything in your whole body, in your whole being, you got to stop yourself from clicking on that. And she clicked on it. And the one thing I said, look, you have to go to another computer that's not infected and download, you know, the whole gambit, Malwarebytes, Super Anti Spyware, and then also download the latest combo fix, which I haven't heard back yet, because when she went into safe mode and ran Malwarebytes, that didn't do it. So I know she was headed to start combo fix, I think, and that would maybe do a deep cleaning. And I have a feeling by tomorrow, if that system's not cleaned, I'll be seeing it this weekend. I'm sure of it. Uncle Al just mentioned TDSS Killer, which is just such a simple download and so easy to run. I will definitely add that to the list. When I was between appointments, I was in my car and something happened for the first time with my iPhone that I've never seen this. I had the iPhone sitting on the seat beside me, and it was a pretty cool morning. So there was a nice breeze. I had the windows open in the car. I was on accessories, had the radio on, and I was making some notes for some things. As a matter of fact, I was making some notes for tonight's show. And I looked at my iPhone. I wanted to check my mail, and there was a big warning saying, your iPhone's overheating. Before you use this, it said, I need to cool off. And I'm looking at it, and I was like, wow, and it was hot. It was not there that long, but it was sitting in direct sunlight. You cannot leave your iPhone in sunlight. And I can't believe this is the first time I've seen this message. But my phone, man, it was a hot potato. It was really hot. And so I rolled up the windows, and I turned on the air conditioning, and I'm holding my phone in front of the air conditioner to one of the vents to cool it off so I could check my email, and finally cooled down and then got a service provider and connected and allowed me to turn it on. Interesting. The only functionality that was available was to make an emergency call. When I tried to turn it on while it was in that state, it said emergency call, and then it had the dialer, and that was it. That was the only functionality that you'll have when you get that message that it's overheating. So I could dial 911, but that's about it. Keep that in mind if that hasn't happened to you. Do not let your phone be in direct sunlight. Keep that in mind if you're on the beach this summer, or if you're at, man, we're in spring right now. We're not even in summer. And just that heat being magnified through the windshield on the seat beside me was enough for my iPhone to start overheating. One thing I want to talk about that this week, it has helped me so much. Two programs. One, you know I mention all the time, and that's the Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. And I'm going to have a link in the show notes this week. And if I am an affiliate, if you do click on that, I will get a commission for that. I love the program so much, and it saved me again today. One of my clients, brand new system, going from XP to Windows 7. I used that, but I used another program that I have not embraced until this week, and I've now used it a couple times, and that is WSUS Offline. Now, what is WSUS Offline? That is your Windows Update. WSUS is an update program that used to be just for servers, where you can have a network where you run the program, you can manage all of your Windows updates, and it can push them out via group policies, and it gets complex to push it out. Well, the WSUS Offline is so simple to manage and run. You download the program, and of course, I will have the link to the program for you to download. And when you get it and unzip it into its own directory, I highly recommend that you put that directory on an external drive that's going to host all of the hot fixes, service packs, patches, everything from every operating system that you could possibly imagine to not only that, but the Office 2003, Office 2007, and Office 2010. You can have updates for Windows XP, Windows Server 2003, the 64-bit editions of XP in 2003, and then, of course, your 32 and 64-bit versions of Windows Vista, Server 2008, Windows 7, and Server 2008 R2. Now, I'm only interested in the workstation upgrades. So create a directory on your drive that you just put this, like let's say you make this directory WSUS and you unzip the program there. Create WSUS like underscore updates. Then when you launch the program, you get to check off what updates you want for which operating systems. So the first tab is Windows, and I clicked, and of course you pick your language. So I just picked XP, Vista, and Windows 7. For XP, I don't know anybody using XP 64-bit, so I only care about the 32-bit version. For Vista, I want both versions. And of course, for Windows 7, I want both versions. Then there's other options where you can check to have these updates all included. And I have checked the cleanup download directories, include service packs. I like having Microsoft Security Essentials because one of the things that I did today on a new system, not only did I do all the updates, but when you go to update it, you could check, hey, I want to install Microsoft Security Essentials. You can verify the download updates. You can include the C++ runtime libraries and .NET frameworks. You know how difficult it is to install them. It's so nice having them all at one shot when you go to update a system. There's a section called USB Medium. This is where you check that box and there's a space to put the name of the directory that you want the updates to go. This is where you put the drive letter of your external drive and that directory that I told you to create, WSUS updates. You then click start. Oh, before you even click start, there's a tab office. So I picked the English language for all three versions of Office, because you never know what version you're going to run into. I mean, most common right now I run into is 2007. Here, they will download Service Pack 3, which is also available for Office 2003, and then they're up to Service Pack 1 on 2010. Once you click Start, I walked away, came back in a couple hours, it was all done, and now all of the updates, it was almost, I think, 9 gig of updates that were now in that directory. I have that external drive, and it's where I keep my FABS auto backup for tech also. I'm at a client today, brand new system that I just did the move from XP. They now have Windows 7. It was a brand new Dell, and it had Service Pack 1 already installed. But there were still over 32 updates that had to be done. And I know this because I quickly plugged in my drive, went to the WSUS update directory, clicked on that executable, and then I just checked off what was needed, and that was it. It found all the updates for the operating system and installed them all, and you get a nice command prompt box, an old DOS box, and it will just list all of the updates that it's doing, and it was fast, and it just worked, and I can't recommend it enough. If you are in an environment where you got to do multiple updates and you don't want to go through a server deployment of WSUS, this is what you want to do. As a matter of fact, let's say you have just a few systems. Have just a central place where you can keep updating and have it a share on the network. And then you could just, even if you remote into that desktop and then click on the network share, it's not downloading it from the internet, it's doing it from the network. So even that, in a situation where you have a couple systems where you have to manage it, I think this is the best and easiest to maintain Windows update. I often get emails, Mike, what is the best way to update your operating systems and update Windows 7, update Windows XP? I think this is it. If anybody has anything that's better than this, I want to hear it, because right now, I think this is the best program available, because I think Ryan's RVM and I think AutoPatcher, I don't think they're being updated. So right now, this is what we have, and it's the WSUS offline. Time for some email. This is a graphics card from Barry. Hi, Mike. I wanted to see if I can get your opinion and advice. I'm a gaming nerd, and Diablo 3 just came out. It lags terribly on my PC, and in order to run it decently on my computer, I have to turn down all the settings. My computer is about 2 years old, and it is an HP Pavilion Slimline. Are there reasonably priced graphics cards that are better than what I have that you could sell to me and install? I'm not looking to get crazy and run this stupid game. Now, I'm not in the market to sell cards like that, but I sent him a link to the Maximum PC Best of the Best, and they have all of the cards that you would want, from mid-range to money no object to, you know, 300 or less. They have it broken down in some really nice categories. The best card for that price range. So here's what I recommend to not Barry, not just you, but anybody who's listening. After you pick that card, go to Amazon and use my link. And that's the best way you can support me in the show, is buy that hardware using my Amazon link, amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon, or just go to my website and click on it. And you'll be able to just purchase that card, get a great price, great service and shipping from Amazon, and price stays the same and I get a commission. So Barry, thank you, and use my link to purchase the card. This is from Brandon, Podcasting iTunes, RSS. Thanks for your podcast. It has been very helpful. My church wants to make its sermons available on iTunes. What a great idea. We have server space, so that is not an issue. Each Sunday, the service is recorded, and I plan on using Audacity to edit out any songs that are not public domain. The problem that I am having is creating the XML file for iTunes. I looked at yours, saved it, and edited it, but there has to be an easier way to create this file. I found some websites that had file generators, but they did not offer some options that I wanted, like the option to add a picture. Any help would be appreciated. You know, Brandon, the best solution that I can give you is add WordPress to your website, even if it's just a separate directory, /WordPress.com. Do that. Once you add WordPress, there are some great podcasting plugins. And a matter of fact, right now I am literally logging into my website to tell you the exact version of the plugin that you need. And it's Blueberries PowerPress. And right now they are up to version 3.0.1. And actually, oh, excuse me, there's a new version 4 available. I'm actually behind on the updates, but it's the Blueberry PowerPress. What you'll be able to do is you will be able to use that plugin, and if you follow the settings options, you'll literally be able to control not only your iTunes, but when you post your podcast, it will inform iTunes that it is absolutely ready. And not only that, once you have WordPress, your RSS feed is automatically generated for your website. So even if your website is not WordPress, create a separate directory and install WordPress with your website just to take advantage of these plugins that's going to make your podcasting life very easy. Let me know how you make out with that. And if anybody else has better suggestions, I mean, I only know WordPress and these plugins, but it doesn't matter what your website is. You could still have a separate one-off directory with WordPress just to handle your podcasting needs and it not interfere with the main feed of the website. And now you have this separate feed that's automatically generated every time you post. So all you have to do is upload the audio and do a quick blog with the WordPress, and it generates the RSS feed. This next question is from Rathshish, and I probably butchered that. Hi, Mike. In show 403, I heard you are planning to buy a new PC for recording alone. This is standalone. Why go and get new hardware when you can do this in VMware Player? You can set up a VM with the OS and the software, and this will be isolated from your host computer. I use this to experiment with new software and Linux distros. Hope it helps. I love virtual, but I got a big problem. You cannot use a FireWire device in a virtual environment, and my mixer is FireWire. I actually thought about that. This is not an option for me because of my FireWire mixer. And I don't know why, but Parallels, VMware Fusion, even VirtualBox, they cannot pass FireWire through. And I don't know why that is. If I could do FireWire, that would absolutely be an option for me. This is from Cameron, and reinstalling the Windows OS. Hi, Mike. In show 405, you were talking about reinstalling Windows OS and contacting Microsoft to reactivate the OS. Personally, I find it a hassle ringing Microsoft. Yeah, it's not that bad, but wait until you hear this. You can use a tool called ABR, Activation Backup and Restore, and it's found at directedge.us. It will pull the OEM key plus the activation file, which is crucial. It hasn't failed me yet on a Windows Vista or 7 reinstall. It will definitely save you time. It's quick to run, and it's portable. The only downside is that ABR will only work on a functioning OS. That is the downside. Thanks again for your podcast. Cheers. And this is Cameron from Australia. And those links will be in the show notes. And it's Activation Backup and Restore. I am absolutely going to test that out. One thing, it would not have helped me on the crash system that I had worked on, but there were a couple others having that. Yes, it would have saved a few minutes in a call on Microsoft. So this is great. Another great utility to include in our software tool bag. This is from Steve, and I've got a long email here, and the subject is thanks and a question. Hi, Mike. I wanted to say I've been listening to your show for a few months now. I recently got an iPhone and the Stitcher app. Podcasts are so easy to listen to anywhere I go. So I've arrived a bit late to the party. I love the mix of software, hardware, troubleshooting, and general information you give each week. There are a lot of podcasts that sound like somebody read Wikipedia and decided to do a podcast on some random subject. I had to filter through a lot of stuff to get to a show with as much substance as yours. Thanks for all the hard work you put into producing a quality podcast. I work for a small engineering company with 10 people, so we don't have an IT department. When things go bad, which isn't that often, I usually get the task of fixing the problem. I do have more computer knowledge than anyone else there, but in reality, your show and Google has been my friends. I've used things I've heard on your show numerous times, and thanks. You made me look good, but then we've raised their expectations too. Yes, that's what happens when you produce miracles, you're expected to do that all the time. Sorry, I realized this email was getting lengthy. I put my question in italics if you want to skip to it. That's okay. I have a question that I haven't found any good information thus far and was wondering if you had an opinion. We value our data. It is everything, and we back up like a madman. We have a 1 terabyte NAS at about 60% full, about 5 years old, looking for a replacement now before it goes bad, and do incremental backups each evening to a USB drive, and we do a full backup once a week. Take that off-site and bring in a drive with a previous weekly full backup. We also do a nightly off-site incremental backup from an off-site location running Best Sync, running through our FTP server. The backup includes Outlook PST files, redundant backup, as we have Google Apps to host our email and IMAP to Outlook local PST files, which are about 3 to 4.5 gigs each. Our upload speed is about 10 megs through Comcast, which I believe is the highest they offer. Starting the offsite backup around 11 o'clock or midnight, it can run until lunchtime the next day, as it seems to have numerous errors downloading some of the PST files, but eventually they do download. The NAS isn't showing any errors that I can see through the web interface, but it may be fixed with the new NAS box, which is in the works. That was a long lead into my question. We have a VPN through LogMeIn Hamachi, and it has been great, except when the backup is running. We have several people who work on the road from hotels, from home, or clients, offices several days a week. And access late at night and early in the morning is important. The external backup happens via a computer at our owner's house. And I would rather keep that as is, so he doesn't have to change anything. I'm supposed to solve the problem, which would include a little involvement from him as possible, other than giving me an okay to spend some money, which will not be an issue. We embrace technology as long as it is the right technology for us. Would it be possible to install a separate internet line using Fios 3535, 35 meg up, 35 meg down, that we could use for internet and VPN access and use our Comcast internet for the backup and FTP server, which is used by our clients infrequently? You could do the networking and separate and have separate networks with separate IP schemes. It will get complicated doing the routing, but it can be done, and it is a great way to offload. I recommend just using one to offload only the backup. Maybe just use Fios just for your backup. And then you don't have to worry. That could just run all day long, all night long. Who cares? And it's separate. And just have your backups all go through one of the internet connections. I would not mix anything. I'd keep the backups separate. It seems we could share the two using a dual WAN router. No, but if Fios gives us good upload download, could I isolate the Comcast, or would there be a benefit to the FTP server using a second NIC in that machine? Windows, no Linux here yet. It looks like I can add Fios for about $85 to $100 a month with a dynamic IP. With the Hamachi VPN, we don't need a static IP. By the way, I hope you are paying for the business-grade service of Hamachi, because they throttle back your connectivity if you don't pay for the business service. So right off the bat, if you don't have the business class, pay that, and you may actually, that may take care of the problem. So do that first if you haven't already. That is a small cost for the benefit we get from it. If our people get a few more billable hours each month because they have better access, it will more than pay for it. Any thoughts on this? I don't want to miss an obvious solution, but I want to fix I want to fix it in one and try, and not try incremental improvements to the process until it works. Switching to Fios with the faster uploads would improve the situation, and I could probably limit the bandwidth to the FTP so it wouldn't limit the VPN as much. But my goal is to make the problem go away and not have issues. Thanks. I would create a separate VPN network with the Fios just for the backups, using secondary NIC cards just for the backups, and I would keep that totally separate, even as a separate VPN. Then have a VPN for your users and nobody would be impacted. Then you got the best of both worlds. Maybe I'm looking at it too simply, but that's how I would do. But first, check for the business class service of Hamachi. This next email is from Ken, who's the author of that program I talked about last week called Helm. He was blown away and he's like, wow, I just listened to your show from last night and I'm pretty jazzed. Thanks for reading my email on the air and talking about Helm. A quick response to a couple of the questions. Inputting data. One, early on, we used both Citi and a dump of Spiceworks to import network data into Helm. Since then, we've expanded how Helm deals with vendors, manufacturers, model, etc. So the import has become more complicated and we don't have a new tool yet. Importing data too. Scanning and importing is the way to go. But when I work through a brand new client's network by hand, I get my head around it much faster. There is a lot of information that a scan can't come up with. Scanning is still better. My original model for Helm was SAS. I would like the Helm data to be securely available from the web. Home, work, smartphone, etc., if there is a network problem. It doesn't help if Helm is on the broken network. With SAS, I was thinking I could make Helm very inexpensive or even use an advertising model to make the basic version free for small businesses. Paying for it has been a challenge. I have thought about putting it out there as open source and seeing how good it could get. Still thinking. It has a consultant's version where I can switch between client information fairly quickly. I probably started thinking about this many years ago while missing vacation time with my kids, being on the phone, talking client through something or other. I think it can also be handy when you bring on a new employee or junior tech and you don't have to hold their hand as much. Some of my clients like it because they don't feel like they're dependent on what's in my brain as much. I really want to keep it targeted towards the small businesses. About your show, I saw Helm in your show notes, but I did not skip forward. There was so much good stuff listed before it that I didn't want to miss anything. Thanks, Ken. And we are still in touch. Ken emailed me and is going to hook me up with a copy and possibly some copies for some listeners. So go to the Helm demo from the, I have a link in the last show, and check out that demo. And if you have any questions about that program, send them to me so I can pass it on to Ken and we can get this project cooking. I think it's really good and I think it's really going to help everybody that's out there doing what we do, supporting clients. Maybe you're just in a big IT department or even a small IT department. You need to get a hold of your assets and manage everything. It's so important, and having good documentation and good information at your fingertips. This is really good. Thank you, Ken. And I'm looking forward to working with your program. No music tonight. I want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the show. I really appreciate your support. Don't forget to use my Amazon link when you're making purchases, or anybody you know, send them to my site for the link, or just tell them amazon.mikenation.net. I will talk to all of you next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.